Welcome to the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com.
Howdy, y'all. That's me. I'm Steve Abramowitz, and this is the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. Welcome to our People in the News, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with special guest Jeremy Sladen. Jeremy Chad Sladen, born July 28, 1982, in Paducah, Kentucky, son of Gary and Suzanne Sladen. Father Gary played baseball at Murray State from 1980 to 84. Jeremy Sladen is a certified personal trainer, a Division I college athlete, first team All-American 7-year pro ball player with the Philadelphia Phillies organization, where he was a 3-time All-Star. First-team freshman All-American selection by Baseball America, 18th-round selection of the Oakland Athletics. Beesball.com said about Jeremy, power-hitting outfielder who emerged as a major force in the middle of the Georgia Tech lineup as a freshman, earned freshman All-American honors in 2002, set a Tech freshman record with 18 home runs. Jeremy is also a recovering addict who has taken his pain and years of healing and turned those experiences and knowledge into the Warrior MBS program as part of his mission to optimize men's health. After experiencing life's peaks and some years of struggle, Jay Slay has a passion for seeking truth in all areas and creates content to help folks maximize their potential, overcome debilitating struggles, and rebuild our culture from the ground up. Jay Slay Made in the USA podcast exists to explore, expound, and exhibit the best of the United States of America and how to make it even better right here in Tennessee. He is on a mission to wake up from the woke culture that is destroying the fabric of this nation. You can join Jay Slay on his search for truth and get Made in the USA podcast at all your favorite podcast outlets. Jay Slay, how are you today?
Hey, what's going on, Steve? Thanks for having me, man. And I don't know where you found that bio. That's been a couple of years since I've even seen that one, but you dug it up. I mean, you found that I was drafted in the 18th round by the A's. That was out of high school. I was actually drafted in the 8th round by the Phillies, which is what led me to play pro baseball. So, I've got to find where you found that bio.
I will forward it to you. I have gotten in trouble in the past for doing my own homework on people, but if you say it's accurate, we can definitely.
It's accurate enough. It's just the unusual information you pulled out that most people don't know. So very good. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, this is your show, so I'm glad we got some news in there. And I apologize for not having you on sooner. You know, you have a great show covering the nation and Tennessee, sometimes the same stories as me. So welcome to the Heartland Journal. You call yourself a digital soldier of fifth generation war, from baseball to soldier. Activated you, and how did your show come about?
Oh, that's kind of a long story. I'll give the 10,000 foot level. You know, as a ball player, you learn how to, you know, fight to get where you want to be. There's really no shortcuts. At least back when I played, athletics got a little bit squirrely these days with the politics getting involved and all that. But in order to be on the field and to be at your best, you really can't take shortcuts. You can't fake it. The coach is going to pretty much put the best players on the field the way he sees it, and that's that. It was very different when I left sports and I got involved in selling roofs and waterproofing projects to the government in Atlanta. So I was working in Fulton County. My biggest customers actually were Clayton County, Fulton County, City of Atlanta, you know, all these big metropolitan government agencies. And that was right around the time that BLM was really taking off with the whole, you know, the woke agenda and the narrative. And, you know, at first you're kind of taken aback by it. I was like, wait, is there something here? You know, is this legit? And then pretty soon I saw not only the funding sources of all that were these internationalists like George Soros, but on top of that, I saw that the actual the product that was creating for minority communities in Atlanta was not helpful to them whatsoever. So it's no better in Atlanta today. In fact, it's provably, I think, demonstrably worse in Atlanta today than it was back 10 years ago when I was doing this work. I saw a lot of the internal government corruption. I saw the good people in government that would say, hey, do you see what's going on here? And I'd be like, yeah, man, I see what's going on. And I didn't like that at all. And, you know, you mentioned in the show intro, I had my own bag of issues that I had to work through. You know, there was addictions that I had built up in my own life. And to get rid of the problem, I had to face the problem. I had to get honest about what was really going on. So once again, no shortcuts. I had to face the facts and do something about it with help, you know. And I saw in our nation it getting worse and worse, and more people choosing to either be deceived because it was just easier, or, you know, unknowingly being deceived by government propaganda, media, et cetera. And it was driving me crazy. So finally it got to be about 2019, pre-COVID. And I just felt God telling me, Jeremy, you need to step out of just selling roofs to the government. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you feel this passion in your heart to seek truth and speak it, then begin to do that, begin to pursue that. So I followed that passion. And then a year later, obviously COVID hit. And man, if I thought people were deceived beforehand, it got about five times worse. And it became so apparent to me. And on top of that, being a government contractor, I saw that my company was having to play by all these rules I did not agree with. And one of the big ones, and I mentioned BLM and critical race theory and how that really bothered me, our company being a nationwide company that was working, you know, getting government grants and that kind of thing. A lot of the, we were trying to get something called, I'm trying to think of the name of it now. It was some funding that's an acronym. Well, that very funding that was paying for the roofing projects, the money that for the government to get these grants, the local Tennessee governments to actually get this money from the federal government, they had to institute, you know, critical race theory curriculum into local education. So I'm thinking, I'm making money from roofing projects that are funding what I think is extremely detrimental education for kids. I'm not going to do this anymore. So for multiple reasons, to get back to your original question of why I left, you know, I saw a real problem. I thought, you know, I need to be another voice that's willing to make some sacrifices to seek out the real truth on these things and to speak it. And, you know, long story short, because I don't want to talk too long, that's sort of what led me to launching the J Slay USA podcast. I'd appreciate it if the listeners would check me out on Rumble and also my Substack. That's where I write a lot of my articles. So That's the 10,000 foot level.
Very good. And so Atlanta is a very secular society. Is that what brought you to Tennessee with all of our churches and churchgoers?
Well, it's, you know, on the one hand, you could say it's secular. I mean, in general, it's following the cultural paradigm that our entire nation is following. I'm from this area. So originally I grew up in Murfreesboro. My family was still here. I met my wife when I was playing baseball. So her family was up in New Jersey. And we just decided if we're going to move somewhere, we want to be closer to family. So my family was obviously much closer being in Tennessee to Atlanta, just, you know, one state away, about a 4-hour drive. So that's the biggest reason why we're here. But I do love it. I do think that we're not nearly as far, if you want to use the word secular, we're not as far down that road. But just like your last guest, Austin Davis, talks about, we've got our own set of issues here. Definitely.
Oh yeah. No lack of content to be created by us. And your love and passion for health and health food. What makes you unique in the fitness market that your clients enjoy? What's your niche?
Yeah. So I, you know, it's one thing to have a podcast and to say, I'm going to speak truth, or I'm going to have guests on that are bold and courageous leaders to create awareness and to drive, you know, people waking up. I think that's a great thing. But a lot of times you want to feel, you know, as an individual, I want to do something concrete that I can see in front of me. So having a background in sports, a background in coaching. And then obviously when you're a pro athlete, I played with the Phillies organization for 7 years, I believe, you know, you understand some of the basics about being in shape. And that was always, you know, working out, eating right, those kind of things was always important to me. And so I launched a program for men called Warrior Mind, Body, and Soul. And it takes into account those three components. I want my body to be physically strong. I want to have confidence about how I look and feel. I want my mind to be clear. You know, I know that when I was wrapped up in the addictions and some of the just self-destructive choices and lifestyles that I was involved with after baseball, man, what a mental fog that I was in. And I know so many men experience that today. And part of the reason they aren't activated to be a light in society is they don't feel like they've got the mental capacity to do it. They don't feel like they've earned that right even. So some of the program is about getting clear in that way. And then lastly, the S in MBS, mind, body, soul, is about getting our spirit back grounded again, grounded in God, grounded in good relationships with other men. So right now the program is on pause. If you want to find out a little bit about it, go to warriormbs.com. But so it's not really a health food program, but it is a healthy lifestyle program, which has a, it's got a physical fitness component, definitely a nutritional plan with guidelines there. And then we have a lot of fun with it. It's also a competition where we fellowship together, but we also compete for points. So there's a lot of men lose their sense of competition. And I think that's one of the things that drives men, especially, is competing. And we need to keep that in our life.
We hear a lot on the show, even when we had Riley Gaines on, you know, where are the men? Where are the dads, the ones with the mm-hmm. armor of God on to protect their girls and the weaker people around them? You've got that going for you for sure. How long have you been in the podcast world? How many episodes are you up to?
Yeah, 2 years. And I wouldn't say that everything's like an episode, because sometimes I'll do a 15-minute deep dive on a topic myself that has nothing to do with a guest. I've probably had 500 videos uploaded. I think I just passed 500 on Rumble. Again, I don't upload, I'm just a one man show. So I don't upload everything to every single platform. That's why I'm encouraging people go to Rumble if you want to see the latest. But yeah, my goal is to have on bold and courageous leaders in their field, but where I feel like I've done a deep dive, where the mainstream, even alternative media, is not, because maybe they're not willing to. I'll take, you know, an hour based on 100 hours of my research, package it into a 1 hour little short film. I mean, it's not super professionally done, but if, you know, I feel like I do a pretty good job of, taking what a lot of people don't have the time to do. You know, your average person wants to be informed, but they don't have 20 hours to go spend to research what's really going on between, say, Israel and Palestine and the history there. Whereas me choosing this life, I have the time to dig into some of that and say, hey, here's maybe what they're not telling you. And that's just one example. So when you ask me about how many episodes, give or take 500. But yeah, you can find them all at JSLAY USA on Rumble. But if you want to follow me on the day to day, this is where I have a lot of fun. My Instagram just passed 75,000 followers. So I have a lot of fun with little short snippets on there. Something I'll find, I'll pop out there with little commentary on it. So yeah, you can follow me on Instagram as well.
That's very impressive. So what are some of your most impactful ones? I know you said 500, we can talk about one, maybe some guests that stand out as real positive impacts on society. What stands out in your mind real quick?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that came to mind, and I think this is important to anybody listening, would be the shows that I've done on child sex trafficking. And that would harken back a little bit. It's a little bit different than maybe what Austin Davis talked about on your show. I've not watched the whole show, but I'm very interested to catch the last half. You know, going deep with some of my guests on there, Matt Murphy is with the Sentinel Foundation. I don't know if you've had him on before. Have you, Steve?
Yeah, I go on his show once a month. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So I've had Matt on, I've had,
we actually do the Murphy's Law segment once a month on this show too. So yeah, Matt has been a very good friend of the show.
Oh, that's great. Now. Yeah. So he's been an impactful guest, especially considering the fact that his own sister was lost to that entire gross world, you know, with the human trafficking and all that. And then another impactful show along that same line. I got to meet Jim Caviezel last summer. Randomly, we sat down on a couch together, had a long talk about human trafficking, what he really believes about it. And I asked him some hard questions about what was going on with Operation Underground Railroad at that time, because some of those rumors were starting to surface. And, you know, what that led to was one of the second higher ups named Nate Lewis, who was in charge. He was a former movie director and all this, but he's the one that introduced me to Caviezel. Nate came on my show, and this was back when he was the kind of maybe third in command over at Operation Underground Railroad. And so he wasn't going to say anything negative at that time, but he told me about what's legitimately going on in other countries, but he wasn't really willing to talk about what was going on in America. And that bothered me a little bit. But Nate later on, about 6 months later, so this would have been 3-4 months ago, we had a long conversation. He's left OUR. He's starting his own foundation. I want to use some discretion because it was a private conversation, but he gave me the lowdown on all that really has gone on with OUR and with Tim, unfortunately. And I'm looking forward to having him back on to do kind of a, not an air out your dirty laundry show, but in a, hey, this is what we know happened there. and this is why you should maybe go a different direction. So you could, if you follow in Jay Slay USA, you'll see that show in the near future.
Okay. And so what are your goals for the show? Do you have a theme?
Well, the theme changes based on what I'm interested in. I mentioned bold and courageous leaders in their field. So I want to get to the truth, even if it is very unpopular with the left, which it almost always is with the left, but even when it's unpopular with the right, because there is a conservative ink out there. And conservative ink, you know, it's always easy to just say, well, here's our narrative, because it's not what the left believes. But a lot of times the truth is deeper than what both sides are willing to tell you, because there is a Hegelian dialectic going on. And the way I describe that for people is there's a tug of war out there that's kind of fake. You've got the progressive left, which they actually are being honest about what they want. They want a totalitarian communistic society. I mean, they won't say that to your face, but you can get it after watching Rachel Maddow for an hour. You basically know what they stand for, right? Or listening to AOC, for instance. Like, they don't have to fake it. They're just going to tell you what they believe for the most part. On the right, you've got a bunch of what I call fake fighters of conservatism, but what have they really conserved? Let's look. I mean, if we've got all these great ideas, why do we continue to have the Overton window slide to the left? Why do we continue to lose? I think it's because a lot of these people don't necessarily want to win. They just enjoy the fight. A lot of them are paid off. A lot of them are Epsteined. And what I mean by that is somebody else is controlling the shots because they can get blackmailed. There's a reason why Greg Abbott doesn't do much about the open border. If you really dig into it, there's a reason.
I was just saying on social media today that the Freedom Caucus, quote unquote, has about 10 times more earmarks in this minibus that just passed than the squad. So with friends like those, who needs them, right?
Yeah. I mean, and even to bring it closer to home, you know, it really bothers me that Bill Lee is going to applaud all of the state representatives and senators that will fight against woke curriculum and all that stuff. But yet when it's his turn, because it's his job to appoint an education director, that's up to him. And twice in a row now, he is appointed hard progressive left, former Soros employees.
From out of state.
Why would you do that, Bill? You know, why would you meet with Bill Gates multiple times? There's just questions like that. And it's like, we can ignore that and say, well, he prayed at the FCA banquet. He's a great Christian man. That's not enough. We've got to stand on our principles. So my show doesn't always make me popular with the bigwigs of conservative ink, and definitely not the left. But I think the people are appreciating it more and more, because I've learned a ton. You know, as I've gone down this road, that's why I say not only speak the truth, but seek it. Because if you just think, well, my principles are right, so I really know the deal, I understand the story. Nah, maybe not. Just kind of like with, the Covenant shooting. I mean, the deeper you go with that, the more you realize maybe it's not everything that we're being told. And that's another one with, I think Bill Lee has the power to release that full manifesto. So why aren't we doing it? You know, I just, that's another one that hit me.
If he has the power to do it and doesn't do it, you have to ask, why won't he do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now he could say, if he was on the show, he could say, well, I don't have the power. That's up to the Nashville Police Department. I got a feeling that the governor could pull some strings and get that done.
I think so too. Besides the Tim Ballard Sound of Freedom stuff you mentioned, are you planning anything upcoming that's exciting we can be on the lookout for?
Yeah. Right now I'm doing a deep dive on Christian eschatology. I'm doing it right. I've already released.
That would be my man Steve's wheelhouse. So that's, I'm sure he wants to hear that.
Yes, I do a lot on that. You'll have to listen to my show.
Okay. Well, Steve, you may or may not agree with what I'm about to say, but either way, as I've looked at the different eschatologies that are out there and what I've traditionally held on to in terms of premillennial dispensationalism, I know that's a big word. It was a big word for me too. And I began to look into the roots of it. So that would be this idea of a rapture, 7-year tribulation that accompanies the rise of an antichrist and a one world economic order, the whole bit, right? The Left Behind series is the way a lot of people understand that. I did not know the roots of that, the historical moorings of where that came from in church history. So I began to explore it. I've put out 2 Substack articles now working from the beginnings of it. And right now we're about in the mid 1800s in my 5-part series. But as I come out with the articles, I'm also putting out little short films on it as well. So you can find those short films on my Rumble. I was invited to go on some pretty big shows after putting that out because just, I guess the right people saw it and were interested. But if you want to see that first short film, it's called They Changed the Church. That's what I titled it. They Changed the Church. So that's episode
Amen.
One. You can find
okay.
on my Rumble channel.
We're on the same page there. We'll meet after the show. We'll talk.
All right. Sounds so good.
When you get into the local controversial stuff, it's inevitable since those are the stories that are most needed to be heard. Mm-hmm. Has it had any effect on you or your family? You have young kids, right? Maybe a little older now than when I met you. Has cancel culture come for you too?
Yeah, it's even come within. I mean, of course, when you're putting your stuff out there, I mean, I mentioned Instagram. I've got a big following. I went a whole year and didn't gain a single follower because they shadow banned me to the point I could do nothing. That was an entire 12 months. There's been other periods they've done that. YouTube's kicked me off multiple times where I had to restart. And that's, you know, big tech platforms would be a great blessing for guys like us if they were willing to accommodate free speech. So yes, on that one hand, but a lot of us have suffered that. Closer to home, when I speak about things out loud that are unpopular with the right conservative Christian world, because it's just, I found it to be true. And I'm like, well, this needs to be addressed. This needs to be talked about. It will make sometimes people within my own family very uneasy because they're just like, well, I don't know what to believe anymore about this. Kind of wish you just not talk about it. So there can be cancel culture from within your own family. There's cancel culture in your own heart, even, because you're like, should I really say this? But then you look back at the evidence and you're thinking, it's true. It needs to be said, because if it's not said, it's not going to be addressed. Then we can't solve the problem. And I don't want to live that way. Going back to my sports days, that's not how you fix anything, to just like let it ride because it's uncomfortable, you know? So, and then there's been a time or two where I got on the topic of things like what Austin Davis had to say yesterday, and not on that exact topic, but on another one. And for those who are listening that know what I'm talking about, I'm coming. It's going to be said. It's going to be said, because I've gotten phone calls from people trying to shut me down, saying, we will come after you if you keep talking about this. And due to protecting my family, and some agreements that I made with them that were time sensitive, I chose to take down a couple things that I put up in the past. But not only will those things go back up, but there will be a much deeper dive around those things.
It's like the Streisand effect. You tell them not to do it and they're going to do it. And unfortunately for them, they wanted it that way. But for our stuff, sometimes, yeah, they get a little angry. I wasn't at J6, but Steve Baker of the Blaze was, and had to turn himself into the Justice Department. They had him in shackles. Isabella Maria De Luca, another influencer like us and former House staffer and intern, arrested. They've been arrested for doing journalism, as best as I can tell. If they broke a window, fine. They should be in trouble, pay a fine. But if they recorded some stuff and reported on it, that's First Amendment protected. What do you make of the DOJ going after press?
It doesn't surprise me in the least. I mean, at this point, they're agents of the state, and the state wants communism. So, I mean, my simple, those specific examples, I mean, I know who those influencers are, but I don't know their specific stories, but it's not surprising at all to me. You know, I had another great show people can listen to is when I interviewed Steve Friend. He's the, infamous FBI whistleblower. Mm-hmm. I've had him on a few times. And not only did we talk about how far gone he thinks that our government agencies, including the FBI and the CIA, are, but he also talked about what's the battlefield conditions in a civil war. That was a very interesting show. If we were actually going to have a civil war, like a hot civil war, and this is something most people, like, they don't want to talk about because it's like, well, you can't say that stuff out loud. But I'm like, well, let's just have some fun with it, Steve. You want to do a show? He's like, yeah, let's do a show on this. So we actually laid out scenarios on what would happen. It wouldn't be pretty. So
now Steve Friend has been on this show twice. Really? Kyle Serafin has been on the show twice, including a guy who wrote the book, The Fall of the FBI. Steve was just here in Tennessee yesterday, testifying in Nashville about a bill that would have limited the sheriff, the constitutionally elected one, from participating in FBI joint task forces, where the agent is excluded from telling the sheriff, his or her boss, what's going on as it stands now. It was killed in committee yesterday. Do you know about that? Do you think the FBI
In
should be allowed to operate in states like ours without full transparency to our new Sheriff Hughes, who just won the job last month?
You know, I without yes, I did know of the story in passing only. Just because again, I've been busy with other things, so it doesn't sound on its face the way you just described it. I would say no. I want the FBI out of this state unless they have complete and full transparency, which, you know, how are we going to make sure that that happens? I'm not sure.
The
But
bill
yeah.
would have is one paragraph long. Steve testified for it, and they killed it in committee with seven Republicans voting no.
Doesn't surprise me, you know. So to go back to your initial question, you know, what do I think about, you know, the FBI doing whatever they do? Like, I don't trust them at all at this point.
Yeah, why would you? Also, the SAFE Act. 11 Mount Juliet, Tennessee Christians face 10 years in jail for praying at an abortion clinic. Do you think the SAFE Act should be repealed? I think you probably do. And have you spoken to any of those people? Some had their houses raided at 6 a.m. by the FBI, and they are nonviolent. Steve Friend actually told us, if I wake up at 6:05, it's a good day.
Yeah, I, you know, that again doesn't surprise me. I knew about the story in passing. It's sad that we're at where we're at with these kind of just fundamentally obvious things getting shot down, not by you know, hard left Democrats, but by Republicans even. And it makes you ask the question why. And you know, when it comes to the Tennessee stuff, I'll spend like if there's a big story here, I'll spend a month and do some kind of deep dives on it. And then for the next 6 months, I'll get off back into the kind of the global level, or maybe a spiritual look at things, and I'll sort of lose touch with it. So I'm sorry I don't have more to say on those specific recent issues.
That's okay, no worries. You aren't on a big network like Fox or CNN, like I'm not. So I call you an independent citizen journalist. Hope you think that's fair
Oh,
characterization.
yeah, absolutely.
But without modern social media and tools like Zoom that we're on now, we couldn't produce this content. ABC or CBS wouldn't have us. Like my journalist Jonathan Cho was fired from ABC, but we do it anyway. News just came out that Facebook sold direct messages for $100 million to Netflix. So I'm done with Facebook and Instagram. They own that too. Before they're going to be done with me, which they don't want me anyway. Do those big socials affect you or your company?
100% they do. Just like I mentioned earlier with Meta, it's in particular, you know, even though my biggest following is on Instagram, do I like Meta? No. Do they like, I mean, they provide a good tool. Instagram is a fun tool, and it's well made because of all the, you know, billions, if not trillions of dollars at this point poured into that company. But yeah, I mean, they affect me in a big way. You know, I get subscribers on my Instagram, that, you know, pays my bills to some degree. So like last week, Instagram, because I posted a picture of a, and this may surprise some of the listeners, I posted a picture of one of the Palestinian girls whose face had got burned up in one of the bombs. And it wasn't overly gory. It just showed that her face had been burned. And Meta said, you can't post that. And they removed my ability to do subscribers for a full week. So I couldn't get any new subscribers. So that, I mean, that's a microcosm of a bigger problem with censorship. But yes, I mean, those big tech platforms absolutely could be a huge benefit, but they don't.
And it's literally insane when you think about it, because there was like Pulitzer Prize winning photography that came out of the Vietnam War when the naked napalmed girl was coming, you know, running down the street towards the American soldiers. I mean, that was powerful, poignant stuff. Your picture is no different than that, and probably even tamer. And yet, this corporate woke company says, no, you can't, you're in the penalty
Well, I
box
mean,
for a week.
if you're willing to dig on this, and Steve, I know you have a background of with the Jewish family. I guess that means an ethnicity more so than religion. I don't know how deep you went with all that, but you look at the big tech platform owners, the CEOs, Mark Zuckerberg. I can't think of
BlackRock,
it. What's that?
Larry Fink.
Black
I know
BlackRock,
where
but
you're going with
even the.
that, yeah.
But even the pre, you know, Larry Fink's going to be Jewish. Mark Zuckerberg's going to be Jewish. They've got their bias on this whole thing too, right? So that's why I think that, in particular, when I posted the Palestinian side of things, saying, "Look at this violence," you know, because it bothers me right now that
that's why I always say AI can't be New Testament. It has to be Old Testament.
I'm having to think about it. There's probably some layers there. What? AI can't be New Testament. It's got to be Old Testament.
Yeah, because it has to be, yes, you just plays right into exactly what you've been talking about. And Steve gets it because he's a follower of Christ.
The prophecy has to be there or else it doesn't make sense. If he can't be an AI that believes in Jesus, then you're fake. You're satanic. So, okay.
Yeah, well, it took me a minute.
Yeah, that's why I like to say it. It's a way homer. You only get it on the way home. But anyway,
you're too quick for me, man. You got to slow down. I'm a Tennessee native, dude. I don't know where you're from, but like, it takes me a good 5 minutes to figure one like that out.
All right. Well, I know like Stripe payments and PayPal have a history of interfering with conservatives' ability to transact commerce. Every run into trouble, like our friends at youramericanflagstore.com, who had $100,000 pretty much held hostage for making a Trump flag and almost had to close. Anything like that ever come your way? Because you're a pretty big conservative influencer at this point.
Trying to think of the specific. I mean, the main thing is them taking my videos offline or kicking me off a platform where I can't upload or I can't monetize. That's kind of the worst thing they can do, because if I don't have the ability to get out there, then I don't have the ability to make any income from it. So, yeah, I mean, it's happened probably 10 times since I got started, and YouTube has been the worst. You know, YouTube has been offender number one. You know, the very first time it was actually Steve Friend. I had him on, and I had the Google whistleblower. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Really
sharp.
YouTube
is owned by Google, yeah.
Yes, but he's known as the Google whistleblower. He was one of the original guys that was a big name. He was one of the whistleblowers with Project Veritas. He came on my show and was talking about Google's algorithms and how they work to censor. And this guy's not even a conservative. Like, you know, and I had him on my show on YouTube, and boom, I was gone. They didn't even give me multiple strikes. They just said, you know, this is outrageous, you're gone. And, you know, other than that, I didn't get a reason. So, yeah, I mean, they're out to, that's not even really news at this point. We all know what they're doing. So it's kind of two things that have to happen. On the one hand, yes, we need parallel economies, like, you know, in Rumble. I hope and pray that Meta doesn't come along and offer them a multi-billion dollar deal to buy them out, because I don't know how much I trust those guys up in Canada running Rumble. You know, in terms of holding to the principles, I think on the one hand, Rumble, they know, like, hey, one of our market niches is the fact that we are free speech. So whether they believe in free speech or not, it's good for them to uphold free speech, because all the guys like us are flocking over there, right? My fear is, are they going to have the courage of that conviction, or the, you know, stand on principle when Meta comes along and says, hey, you're starting to get annoying. Here's a couple billion to shut up and let us own you.
Sellout, the big sellout. Yeah.
Yeah. So to the point, we need parallel economies, no doubt about it, and parallel technologies. But at the same time, I also think in terms of arrests, you know, I'm thinking in terms of January 6th, that may not be a great example. You know, if everybody says what they really feel and they stop being scared, the government really can't do a whole lot. They really can't. It's when you've got a thousand brave people that are willing to speak up. Well, they can go after 1,000. You know, the FBI can sick their agents on maybe even 10,000 people across the United States. But if you get 1 million that are being loud about what they believe and they're just saying it without fear, what are they going to do? And I think that's what needs to happen on these big tech platforms.
I think J.R. Rowling did a good job of that just this week, where she basically said, if saying that is bad, that a man is a man and a woman is a woman, arrest me. And they basically cowered and said, well, no, we don't want the press. But okay, moving
that's
on.
Right. That's right.
So,
yeah.
So one thing about being a Q&A guy like you and me is we can control the Q all day long, but we have no control over the A. Yeah. I learned that early with the Franklin Mayer's race, right? Which got me kicked off of social media for a week too, by the way, which compared to you going after the whistleblower of Google and my little story, crazy. But anyway, somehow the algorithm found me in this pool of trillions of bits and bytes. But have you ever been lied to on air which really just means your listeners were lied to because hosts don't matter much. I mean, they can lie to me all day long. I'm sure Don Lemon votes for Biden, but maybe one or two of his listeners were for Trump, right? Have you ever been lied to on your show?
I think so. And if I know for a fact that I'm being lied to, you know, I don't, it depends on the scenario. If it's a point that needs to be made for the good of the viewer and the good of maybe even mankind, I'm going to call them on it, you know, and I'm going to at least ask them more questions to get to the truth. Are you kind of asking what I would do in that situation?
Real world, like, what did you do if that actually happened to you? I mean, in my situation, I just moved on. I took the show down on her safety when I heard they came to her house, but it's there now. All the lies and truth can be heard. And no, I didn't change the name of the show because of that. It was a 100 episodes ago or more.
Yeah.
Just curious how, if you caught someone in a lie afterwards, the press came after you, like Phil Williams came after me, and how you handled it or what you did with it, or maybe you've never been lied to.
You know, okay. Actually, looking back, now that I know what you're talking about, is it okay if I bring up the name or should I not?
Do it.
Okay. So yeah, I interviewed Gabrielle, who was running for mayor, and I think she's got a lot of good qualities. I think there's a lot of policy positions she held as an alderman that were very good, that we would all agree with, right? But then when she was actually running, I think she made a lot of decisions on even what to talk about that just were way out of place. Right. And you know, but she'd had 2 years of good policy decisions here in my town of Franklin. So you want to trust that person. At that time, when I was doing interviews with her as well, you're giving her the benefit of the doubt. Right.
Right. Exactly.
And I think to some, because it's like, okay, I either trust this person that has good conservative policy, or I trust Phil Williams from Channel 5 News, who seems like an attack dog for, you know, progressive politics all the way up the chain in a huge corporate media complex. I'm going to trust this lady named Gabrielle Hansen. You know, like that's the first place you go. I do think that she definitely stretched things. And I think when her back was really against the wall, you know, she said things that were fabricated and I didn't know it at that time. Cause you know, as you're talking there, I'm like, well, what's an example? And I'm trying to think through the Rolodex of all the guests I've had, but yeah, you know, and by the time I figured it out, the election was about over. And I really have not spoken to her since. I do want to say with Gabrielle, I think that when it comes to some of those really hot issues like the Covenant shooting or other things that she shouldn't have been talking about, but did, she had some truth there that she'd excavated that others were unwilling to, but she sandwiched that alongside of things that I think could be demonstrably false. So you've got, it's kind of like what the CIA does, honestly, and it, where they take a, they'll give people a little bit more of the truth because they know, like, hey, we're caught. If we don't get Joe Biden out of this mess, like we got to create. So they'll give a little more of the truth, but they'll sandwich it with a lie, which creates confusion. And then people don't know what to believe and they just kind of let it go. And, you know, ultimately her saying the things she said did not do her any favors unless she was being paid off. And I've wondered that. Because how do you come down from, you know, moving from Chicago, spending 2 years building up a good reputation as an alderman, making good policy decisions, and then going so far as in our cultural climate where if you say anything like even slightly racist or slightly anti-Semitic, you're going to be nailed to the wall. And she invited, you know, a group of guys that are, you know, supposedly white supremacists to be her personal escort and bodyguard. Like, so stupid. And I'm just thinking, Gabrielle, you're smarter than this. You're smart. You know, so there's a part of me that's like, was this a plant? But that'd be a damn good plant for like to come in for 2 years and then to fake everybody out. Because not only did those decisions she made hurt herself, but it also hurt large groups like Williamson families that vouched for her. Cause everybody was in a rush
to
figure out what to do going up against the political, you know, conservative ink machine that is Ken Moore. Not that he's a big conservative, but he was supported by the big conservatives and, you know, in at the Tennessee state level. And you got to ask why. I just think there was a lot more going on with that entire race than meets the eye. And you said, this is something I want to go back to. You said that little old you, which you're not that little, but that you got your show pulled down off of some of the big tech platforms. I think that if that election, the mayoral election in Franklin, was as important as what I've got good knowledge that it was going up the chain, people like the Haslam brothers that are worth multiple billions of dollars, they can make a phone call to Google or YouTube and say, hey, this needs to come off the air. You know?
Yeah.
So I want to lend some credibility to things that Gabrielle said. I know I'm not giving specifics right now because I'm a little fuzzy on it, but I think that there were some truths she was willing to say that no one else was, and it was way premature, probably shouldn't have been said during an election run, that were used against her. But at the same time, I think she'd been caught on some other personal things that did not help.
And just for the record, and yeah, we'll move on to something else, but when she was on my show and she did that, which was a year ago now, right after the events at Covington, which we talked about yesterday with Austin Davis,
people Covenant.
Can go back and listen. Covenant, she was still just an alderman. She wasn't even in the mayor's race. That was this year. Well, the following year. So the whole unraveling of the onion came way later. And that was still, in my opinion, hey man, no one else is talking about Covenant and what could have really been the motive. They want to hide it. They want to make red flag laws. They want to use it as a way for the Justins to raise millions of dollars and get their national profile higher. And now we've got Gloria running for Senate against Marsha Blackburn, all using those poor innocent children's deaths as their platform. So she was the only one willing to say, wait a minute, there's something here. It's not a diary. It's a mosaic of evidence on laptops and texts and blah, 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 blah. And because they pounced,
yeah,
I knew there was something there. But then I had her back on a second time when she was running for mayor, giving her the opportunity to come clean on everything. And she didn't. And that was her choice. She's the politician. She can decide what to do. And she lost. And that's the end of her. But moving on.
Yeah.
Because we only got a few more minutes. All right. FuturePhilly.com wrote about you in 2009.
Oh, boy.
Can you believe that's 15 years ago? In a somewhat surprising move, 27-year-old outfielder Jeremy Sladen has announced his retirement. Do you miss baseball?
I do, because I loved it. I mean, my whole life. And that doesn't tell the whole story. I actually got a chance to come back to baseball after taking a year off back to the Phillies. And it was a beautiful story because I spent that off season or that time, you know, after I'd retired trying to figure things out. So it was really, I missed an entire season. And then I got a phone call from the Phillies asking if I was, you know, in shape and all this, and I missed it. So I got a chance to go back, and that's where I met my wife. So
that is beautiful.
So it was a pretty wonderful, you know, return to baseball there for a very short time. But I miss baseball. It's a great game. I wish the politics weren't a part of sports at all, the way that they are, at least.
That's what I wanted to ask you. MLB has joined the woke crowd. Five Tampa Bay Ray players opted out of wearing LGBTQ pride-themed uniforms during the team's annual Pride Night event. Franklin now has an annual Pride Night event. Kids can attend. You were involved in that in the news. What do you make of woke MLB? And if you were still there, would you do like the Rays players and opt out?
Course I would. I would opt out, and it's amazing me we're even having this discussion. I mean, here we are talking about we're going to have a night as a bunch of baseball players where we wear, you know, rainbow uniforms to celebrate a perversion of God's laws. Like, that's legitimately what we're doing.
Heterosexual night or missionary style night. I mean, it's crazy because we're really talking about sexual peccadillos.
That is exactly what we're doing. And it's an embarrassment. You know, it's not an embarrassment to these people that are so far gone, they don't know that it is, but I would not only be saying, you know, a lot of the players, they just kind of quietly like say, we don't want to do this or whatever. I would be like an active evangelist to get other players to stop doing it too, or else the entire team is going to set the bench and we'll see then who's going to buckle first, the owner or all the players. That so I would be like a salesman to get like the entire MLB to stop with the nonsense.
So let me finish up on this. A guy named Sid Ziegler, founder of LGBTQ sports site OutSports, denounced the players' decision to not wear the Pride-themed jerseys and slammed the Rays management. Quote, people are misrepresenting what listening to management about what putting a rainbow flag on your uniform means, he said. It doesn't mean you endorse sex between men. It just means everyone is welcome at the ballpark. Ziegler added, it would have been so much better if no one had worn the rainbow stuff than if only a few had. Sounds like if the whole team refused, he'd have been okay with it. Think that's true. A, he wouldn't make a fuss if they didn't do. You think a team of pros these days would 100% refuse. And here's why I asked that. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred said that he leaves the decision to hold Pride designated games to the teams themselves. Just so happens 29 of the 30 MLB teams have an LGBTQ plus Pride night in 2023. Do you believe him? And 29 are all for it.
That's a lot of questions there. Can you go back to the very first one?
Main question is, do you really think that 29 teams, if given the vote, would all say, yes, we want to do this, even though Sid Ziegler, who founded this whole thing, said they should just not do it if they don't want to all do it?
I think there's a difference in, well, you know, who are the teams? Does the team mean the ownership that's beholden to BlackRock and those interests? Because the owners are going to be scared and probably say yes. If you went to each individual player and said, we're based on a consensus of the players, you know, and the majority vote will win, you go talk to each one individually and say, hey, what do you really want to do this? I think the majority of players are going to say no, which would mean the teams would say no. And I don't believe that Ziegler person whatsoever in terms of them saying, well, it'd be better if nobody wore it. Guarantee you that if nobody wore it on one team, he would throw a massive fit about that only some of the teams. It should be all the teams or none of the teams. That they're going to say whatever they're going to say. They're going to lie. They're going to obfuscate the truth, like whatever they can do to get their way. And we've got to know as Christians exactly what they're dealing with, what we're dealing with here. They're not going to play by the rules, but they sure are going to expect you to.
That's right. All right. All right. Well, thank you very much. We are at the end here. So tell everyone where they can go find out more about you. You mentioned it, but let's go down the laundry list of all the wonderful things.
No, happy to.
If you're ready for your own, I'll just give a pitch real quick, listeners. Sure. If you're ready for your own personal great reset, followed by your own great awakening, you can join whatever the Warrior MBS team becomes. He won't lie to you. The next 70 days is a stretch for you, but nothing worthwhile is ever easy. Just be confident that as you get stronger, you will begin to thrive on the challenges. I'm in it this with you, he says. Let's do this. How can people find you on your socials?
Okay, well, that is a pitch for Warrior MBS. So if you want to find out about that program, go to warriormbs.com. And I'm happy to work with people there on an individual basis. Okay, so we're going to stop the team aspect of that for a while. But where I really want people to go is to my socials. Go check me out at Rumble. You can check out all my most recent videos. My Substack, I'm really pushing hard right now. I work very hard on those articles. Those are kind of the deep dives. And that gets into that Christian eschatology study that I'm doing right now. I'm putting those out article by article, working through history. And I think even if you land in a place where you disagree on the recent stuff I've put out, you're at least going to say, man, I learned something. I think you'll at least say that. And then if you want to catch me on the day-to-day, the Instagram is a great place to do that. So those are the three: Rumble, Instagram, and my Substack.
All right, we'll put those in show notes. Cool guy, very level-headed, very articulate. Thanks for coming on. I hope to have you on again sometime.
Thank you, Steve. Really enjoyed it. Great to be here.
All right, really quick, Steve, because we went over time as always. What'd you think of our guest, Jeremy Slade and Jay Slay?
Hey, I liked it. I like to get another fellow podcaster on, and you guys talk shop, because you guys can go back and forth very quickly, cover a lot of topics, and cover a lot of heat, and you're both very knowledgeable. So I very much enjoyed that. And cool. As you could tell, I piped in now and then, but... Good job.
Bill that I was talking about that blocked the FBI from using local sheriffs in Tennessee, it did fail in committee. So I thought I'd go over this, which we just allowed more of. Thanks to Tennessee senators on the Judiciary Committee, all five Republicans plus one Democrat. They have two, but one took the day off. So it took five Republicans to block that bill. FBI violated American citizens' Fourth Amendment rights 278,000 times, Bureau blasted over attempt to put gloss on Section 702 by Joseph McKinnon, April 1st, 2024, April Fool's Day. The FBI is attempting to rehabilitate the public image of Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, as Congress has until April 19th to reauthorize it. Mm-hmm. They used to come begging for money. Now they're coming begging for reauthorization. Get ready for a scare. The Bureau recently posted a video to X that features FBI Director Christopher Wray attempting to put a gloss on Section 702 as part of this months-long campaign. The Bureau's timely propaganda did not escape the attention of critics on X, where the Post received a community note that read, "The FBI violated American citizens' Fourth Amendment rights 278,000 times with illegal unauthorized FISA 702 searches." Among the critics was Senator Mike Lee, Republican from Utah, who wrote, "FBI just got called out in a community note on X. Congress, take note. FISA 702 has been used for warrantless surveillance of U.S. citizens hundreds of thousands of times," all caps. "Yet FBI demands 702 be reauthorized by April 19th, all caps, without a warrant requirement for searches of U.S. citizens. Quote, many in Congress will want to reauthorize FISA 702, which is set to expire April 19th, either without modification or more likely with fake reforms that fail to impose a warrant requirement for searches directed at Americans," added the senator. What is Section 702? Section 702 is a provision of FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, enacted by Congress in 2008 that enabled the state to spy on foreign nationals located outside the U.S. with the compelled aid of electronic communications service providers. Thank you, AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. This was the law exploited by the FBI to spy on members of the Trump campaign in 2016 without probable cause. According to the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Congress enacted Section 702 in order to address a collection gap that resulted from the evolution of technology in the years after FISA was passed in 1978. Many terrorists and other foreign adversaries were using email accounts serviced by U.S. companies claiming ODNI, like Facebook and Google and Yahoo. Because of this change in communications technology, the government had to seek individual court orders based on a finding of probable cause to obtain the communications of non-U.S. persons located abroad. Supposedly going through the courts proved too costly because of the resources required and because the government couldn't always meet the probable cause standard, which was designed to protect U.S. persons and persons in the U.S. Folks, these amendments to the Constitution that we talk about all the time are so simple. Some are a mere paragraph long, like this one, the fourth. "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, such shall not be violated, and no warrants shall be issued, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized." Nothing in that sentence says, well, maybe in a pandemic, well, maybe if it's on Yahoo, well, maybe if I buy it for $100 million at Netflix. Nothing says it. It says shall not be violated. The fact that they are violating it means we no longer have the right. We all have rights, or we don't have rights. Currently, we don't have that one. Producer Steve, remember like what life was like in October 2020 before the world outside of Kirkland, Washington had even heard of COVID-19?
Yeah, I remember it very well.
Yeah. The FDA's hidden V-safe slide from October 2020 and other anomalies by Sonia Elijah, trialsitenews.com. On August 23rd, 2021, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, granted approval or licensure to the first ever COVID-19 mRNA gene therapy product by Pfizer BioNTech, which from the outset was misbranded as a vaccine. The acting FDA commissioner, Janet Woodcock, MD, said at the time, quote, "The FDA's approval of this vaccine is a milestone as we continue to battle the COVID-19 pandemic. While this and other vaccines have met the FDA's rigorous scientific standards for emergency use authorization, as the first FDA-approved COVID-19 vaccine, the public can be very confident that this vaccine meets the high standards for safety, effectiveness, and manufacturing quality the FDA requires. of an approved product. The very next day, the U.S. Defense Department's Secretary Lloyd Austin issued a memorandum mandating the COVID-19 vaccine for all military service members. Woodcock's claim that the Pfizer-BioNTech mRNA vaccine met the, quote, FDA's rigorous scientific standard for emergency use authorization granted on December 11th, 2022, a day that should live in infamy, is paradoxical considering the less stringent nature of the EUA process, emergency use authorization process. For instance, in times of a public health emergency or crisis, when apparently the Fourth Amendment can be suspended, investigational medical countermeasures can be authorized under an emergency use authorization mechanism without complete clinical trial data. In addition, the FDA can grant the EUA of an investigational vaccine on the vague notion that it may be effective and that its known and potential benefits outweigh its known and potential risks, her article says. This is not me. In the lead up to the EUA, a public meeting of the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee, VRBPAC, was convened on October 22nd, 2020. October 22nd, 2020,
yes.
To deliberate on the development, authorization, and/or licensure of vaccines intended to prevent COVID-19. Prevent. Ironically, phase three COVID-19 vaccine trials were never designed to prevent transmission of COVID-19 or measure reductions in serious outcomes like hospitalizations and death. This critical aspect was completely overlooked in the FDA's deliberations. From the start of the COVID-19 vaccine rollout, government officials, public health authorities, and mainstream media engaged in a concerted effort to disseminate misinformation by claiming that COVID-19 vaccines stop the spread, quote unquote, despite them never being designed to prevent transmission. During the meeting, Dr. Peter Marks, FDA chief of the Center of Biologics Evaluation and Research, chose to remain silent on that issue. However, 4 years later, during a hearing on the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic, Dr. Marks confessed when queried by Rep. Michael Cloud about whether the COVID-19 vaccines stop transmissions. He acknowledged, quote, it does not absolutely prevent transmissions. There you have it, folks, right from the horse's mouth. Dr. Peter Marks, who tried to be prepared for that, but the avalanche of reports was tremendous. It again required retasking people on the fly. We had to usually staff up and had many meetings working to increase our ability to go through these reports. Marks also admitted, we probably have not done a good enough job accurately informing Americans about confirmed COVID-19 vaccine deaths and injuries. It is evident that both the FDA and CDC have failed in their obligations to safeguard the health of Americans. Likewise, regulators worldwide have also fallen short in protecting their citizens. However, what is truly reprehensible is the international effort to conceal the damning data on adverse events, especially considering that these risks were known before a single shot was administered to the unsuspecting public who were never provided with informed consent. Sophia Elijah, March 14, 2024, would have been arrested if she said all that in 2020.
Yep.
Now comes the news that the German independent magazine Multipolar has successfully sued the Robert Koch Institute to release the minutes of its COVID crisis deliberations in 2020. Though heavily redacted, the document reveals that pressure was indeed exerted on the Institute's scientists to go along with public policies not supported by scientific research. For example, the Institute expressed the opinion that masking and lockdowns were of doubtful value. Remember our lives with masks and lockdowns?
Yes.
Of special note was the following revelation. As Multipolar has already reported, based on the previously secret papers, the tightening of the risk assessment from moderate to high announced by the RKI in March 2020, 1 month after COVID was a thing, based on all lockdown measures and court rulings on them, was contrary to what has previously been claimed, not based on a professional assessment of the Institute, but on the political instructions of an external actor. Remember, 14 days to slow the spread,
yes.
30 days. Whose name is blocked out on the minutes? We will never know. All of Western civilization did this to themselves. East and West Germany combined is the largest population center of Western Europe and largest economy, by the way. Next story, $100 million universal basic income bill advances in State House committee. Rep. Walter Hudson said this program very explicitly would provide support to illegal immigrants, by Hank Long, alphanews.org. I'll do it real fast. Think $100 million is the high-end estimate or low, or like trillions. A universal basic income pilot program that would sprinkle $100 million across the state, and this is Minnesota, in the form of no less than $500 monthly cash payments to certain low-income Minnesotans, including illegal immigrants, advanced in a state house committee on Tuesday, yesterday, or day before yesterday. Rep. Athena Hollins, St. Paul, introduced HF 2666. Last year, the bill didn't receive a hearing amidst a historical legislative session where Democrats spent down a $17.5 billion surplus and increased the state budget by more than 38%. But with news earlier this month that the state had a projected $3.7 billion surplus, Hollins' bill received a hearing in the House Children and Families Committee. The bill passed through the committee on a voice vote. Ugh. Yeah. Its next stop in the House Human Service Finance Committee, its Senate companion bill, is sponsored by five Senate Democrats and has yet to be scheduled for a hearing. In general, this is a basic income grant program for the entire state of Minnesota, said Hollins. Rep. Mrs. Carly Cotiza with Hoon. I don't even know.
Is that a hoo-hoo?
W-I-T-T, Wit, H-U-H-N, Wit Hoon. Democrat Eden Prairie dismissed the notion that the program should require tracking how recipients of UBI spend their monthly payment. How do we determine what 500? Actually, no, play the clip. Let's hear it from her.
Appreciate the first testifier sharing stories from Otter Tail County. I think one of the things that we like to try to do here in the legislature is really silo ourselves into the metro, the suburbs, and greater Minnesota. And our connections are greater than that. And I have family in Otter Tail County, the real OC, if you will. And I own property in that area. My husband grew up in that area. And I think that this is impacting community members all across the state of Minnesota. So that's just something really important to remember. And it's also really important to remember, I think, after Representative Davis is going on and on about receipts, how do we determine what $500 people spent on drugs? How do we determine what $500 people spent on a couch? How do we determine what $500 of the money that they have they spent on food or childcare?
Exactly.
We earn $5.8 billion off the backs of undocumented immigrants in the state of Minnesota. $1 billion. They are paying taxes, and we should be supporting them as a member of our community.
Thank you, Representative.
$5.8 billion earned, she said, paying taxes, she said. Interesting. Steve, remember yesterday I quoted the only CPA in California on their entire legislature?
Yeah, I think so.
Guess how much, this was part of the $1.6 trillion of debt that they had that they couldn't account for. Guess how much Minnesotans' total spending budget is?
As a state, probably upwards of about, what, $8, $9, $10 billion?
Minnesota's total expenditures in fiscal year 2022 were $58 billion. So if she's right, 10% of what she calls earned comes from illegals. I don't think so. $17.75 billion of debt and a surplus, that's right, surplus of $3.71 billion up from projected $1.32 billion. Sounds like they earned too much from legal and illegals. Just saying that $500 should go to legal taxpayers too. Call Governor Tim Walz and ask for it. Stay tuned for my last thoughts of the week.
Sing a song about the heartland, the only place I feel at home. Sing about the way a good man works until the daylight's gone. Sing the rain.
Time for my quotes for the day. Before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to heartlandjournal.com. Just go there and give us your email and zip code, and we'll deliver news right to your inbox for free. The news you need, not necessarily the news you want. How cool is that? Free. I really hope you like it. We work hard on it, and you can join the conversation at Heartland Journal on Twitter and Facebook, maybe, maybe not, anytime. Love is the most important thing in the world, but baseball is pretty good too. Yogi Berra. Never allow the fear of striking out keep you from playing the game. Babe Ruth. I'd be willing to bet you, if I was a betting man, that I have never bet on a baseball game. Pete Rose. You could be a kid for as long as you want when you play baseball. Cal Ripken Jr. Well, it took me 17 years to get 3,000 hits in baseball, and I did it in one afternoon on the golf course. Hank Aaron. That's it for this episode. Thank you, Jeremy Slade and Jay Slay, for your truth in a culture that seems to no longer value truth. They do. It's not correct to say they don't. It's just not spotlighted as much as it used to be. Still valuable. That is goodbye for now. I am your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor of HeartlandJournal.com. See you all next week. Peace in our time and glory to God. I didn't get the chance to wish you all happy Easter last week. I hope it was happy. So let's go out on the great communicator wishing us all a happy Resurrection Day. And it's okay to compare this to our current guy and his declaration of Transsexual Visibility Day, whatever that is.
Hello, Americans. This week, as American families draw together in worship, we join with millions upon millions of others around the world, also celebrating the traditions of their faiths. During these days, at least, regardless of nationality, region, or race, we are united by faith in God, and the barriers between us seem less significant. Observing the rites of Passover and Easter, we're linked in time to the ancient origins of our values and to the unborn generations who will still celebrate them long after we're gone. As Paul explained in his epistle to the Ephesians, he came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens of God's household. This is a time of hope and peace when our spirits are filled and lifted. It's a time when we give thanks for our blessings, chief among them freedom, peace, and the promise of eternal life. Yeah, I've been dreaming of the wild, wild place, walking where the pine trees dance,
where the river runs deep and the birds all sing. Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.